I am indefatigable. This is Dr. Herbert Albarelli, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with my talk, I Am Indefatigable. For years, we have all lived a human life, and we have been fatigable. We get tired at the end of a long day. Oh, I had such a day at the office, oh my goodness, and I'm so tired. And so then you say, hey, guess what? Junior got A's in school today. Hey, nice. Congratulations, Junior, for your A in school. That's wonderful. And Mariella, she got first in tennis. First in tennis, my goodness. Now you're good enough, you can really play with me and give me a contest. I love that. And the wife says, guess what I did? And he says, I can't imagine. She says, I bought us a new home. You what? Yeah, I bought us a new home. Now, just that little scenario. What happens to the husband's tiredness? All of a sudden, he says, what's going on here? This is an active family. Wow, he is indefatigable. Now, he always was indefatigable, but he didn't say that. He came home on a standard brand day. I'm tired, had a hard day at the office, you know. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yes, that TV series, cartoons, where I shouldn't really try to mention it. I don't remember the name. Where he presses buttons in his job.
Oh, Simpsons.
Is that the Simpsons?
I think. Oh, no, Jetsons.
The Jetsons. There we go. And the Simpsons kept coming to my mind, too. The Jetsons. Now, poor Mr. Jetson. All day long, he had to press a button. And not too often, but just now and then. And so when he came home, he was terribly fatigued. And his wife says, oh, dear, sit back and relax. I'm getting dinner ready, you know. Meanwhile, his wife had been to the movies. She had been traveling in her little space car. She'd been picking up the kids at school and taking them to their tennis lessons and all the other activities. And then she cleaned the house by pressing her button. And her maid, Rosie, went around and cleaned the whole house. And she never complained to her husband about her being tired. But he came home and he was so tired. He was so beat from having worked all day long pressing a button. Well, now, when she said to him, let's go dancing, George Jetson loved to go dancing. And he says, okay. So they went dancing. And when they went dancing, they went to the wrong dance place. It was a dance place where the kids were. And the music was very active. And George was supposed to dance with his daughter and do it, but he just couldn't quite make it. So George got himself a pill, which gave him infinite energy. And so he danced and he danced and he went up the wall and down the wall. He went everywhere and he was, of course, the winner. But it was because of the pill. So, you see, what is the pill? The pill is in our head. The pill is in our thought. Do you think George Jetson really took a pill? He thought he did. And so, therefore, it worked for him. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens for us, too. When the children come home and tell us of their wonderful events at school, and when they tell us they're not so wonderful, oh, da-da-da, you know, you get all riled up about it. But the thing is, what are you doing? You're not fatigued. Fatigue is something that we have built into ourselves and our society because we think that's what we do. None of you will ever understand this until you do it, but I wish it upon each one of you. I wish this upon each one of you. You hear me saying wish. I know the day will come when you will enjoy this too. And the day is that you give four lectures hour lectures a day, you counsel, and then you have many discussions along with all this stuff, and then you have a 3-hour meditation in the morning, and you get up and you have to be on top of it. You have to make sure that everyone is awake and active and participating. You have to make sure that all of the notebooks are out for everybody. You have to make sure that the recording is being done and that you're recording it. You have to make sure that the meals are served properly and anybody who needs something special gets it. But you can't tell anybody that you're doing this because then they'll think that you are, you know, sticking your nose in everywhere. And you have to be so subtle, you have to be so cool, and then you have the prima donnas who think that they know it all, and you have to get through to them somehow in telling them the story of what you're talking about, and not be distressed when people sit there with their eyes closed, you know, and they're meditating, you know, with a snore in between. And you have to tell some people to go and get their knitting and sit with their knitting. You have 100 million things to do. And you say, well, God, that would take 4 or 5 people. No, it would take 25. It would take 25 people because people feel they're fatigued. People feel they have too much to do. People feel they don't have time to do the things that you want them to do. And so you just go do it yourself. And it's a whole lot easier doing it yourself because I don't feel fatigued. I enjoy what I do. I am thrilled with what I do. I'm happy with what I do, and that's why I do it. Now, why don't I make 5-hour lectures a day? You know, that wouldn't be a bad idea, or maybe 6. It's just that the derriere of my participants can't handle that much sitting. You know, Heinz? Yeah. And so I only give 4 hours and then 3 hours of meditation. And even the 3 hours of meditation you're supposed to do from A to Z, 1, 2, 3, without getting up, without going to the bathroom, without falling asleep, and so forth. But it's beyond the scope of my people, so I don't push it that way. I give them each a pause in between and give them each an opportunity. And some of them stay seated, but most of them get up and do something else. Now, you see, if you're fatigable, after a week of doing that, you'd feel terrible. Now, in Europe, we oftentimes had back-to-back seminars, a week here and a week there and a week here and a week there, and all 4 or 5 hours a day, plus the 3-hour meditation, plus interviewing, plus sitting at the meal tables talking, plus counseling, plus everything else, and it was great.
Translating.
I'm sorry?
Translating.
Oh, and translating. Well, that I don't care about.
No,
me translating, yeah, that's right. Me listening to the translator and making sure the translator says what I'm saying, which is like giving a double or triple lecture. And so it's fun. It's fun. Now, if I felt fatigued, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. But, of course, I am not 25 years old. I have said I've been 25 years old, but I'm eternally young. I'm eternally youthful. I'm eternally, I'm eternal. Now, when you're eternal, there's no age to it, right?
Yes.
There's no age to being eternal, and I'm eternal. And are you eternal?
Yes.
Great. You too, Heinz?
Yes.
Great, great. Anita?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Ingeborg?
Yes.
Rex, are you eternal? I said, you bet. Button, Love, the cats, are you eternal?
Everyone.
And what about the princess here? Is she eternal?
Yes.
Why is she eternal?
Because I am eternal.
That's nice. In your world, she's eternal because you're eternal. But she's eternal in her world, whether she's in your world or not. Now, who's that?
Sylvia.
Sylvia? Oh, Sylvia. We leave the best for last, don't we? Mm-hmm. Now, you see, you're eternal. You're eternal. Mm-hmm. You're eternal. So don't you ever tell me you're tired. Don't you ever tell me you're running out of steam or something like that. You know, as we think we do. And we say, I just got more than I can handle. You never have more than you can handle. You do what you can do and set the others aside, and you still handle it. Isn't that right? You have five jobs, and you have to do them all at once. So you take the five jobs, and you set four of them to one side. You do the one, then you take another, and you do that, and you do them all. No problem. Now, 10 years may go by, but no, there's no problem. You never say, I have more than I can do. If you're indefatigable, there's nothing that can tire you, nothing that can make you feel that it's beyond your ability. Now, you say, well, that's a little irrational. Sure it is. What was her name? Carla Flocheri at Hewlett Packard? Yeah, well, anyhow, Carla was a crazy lady. She was an absolutely crazy lady. She went into Hewlett Packard for years, and she developed them, and she created them, and in the process of developing them, she had a few people who didn't like what she did, and they were just eager to get her out of there. She wasn't kicked out because she was no good. She was kicked out because of some jealous people, but that's okay. But she had her cocktail hour. She had her time for tennis. She had her time for her family, for her husband and her children. She had time to look for a new home, you know, upscale home. She had time to do, plus she had time to run Hewlett Packard. She was a delegator, and she did things, and she did wonderful things. She did marvelous things. And the board of directors kicked her out because a couple people were jealous of her. And that's okay. This happens in every big business. It doesn't have to, but it does. Now, what was Carla all about? Was she some magical lady? Or was she just some person who believed in herself?
Yes.
No, she believed in herself. And so she did what she did. Now, when she was kicked out, was she unhappy? Yeah. No. She went on to her next projects. She's not concerned. I mean, she's a billionaire. You know, she's got no problems to worry about. So she just goes on. Now, at the moment, she's taking a break. She and her family are holidaying, you know, just enjoying themselves. And that's the way it should be. She is indefatigable. Mm-hmm. And the heads of all of these major corporations are indefatigable. Bill Gates, can you imagine the diverse things that he has on his mind and the diverse things that he must give his opinion to before it can be done so that it represents the company? And can you see how some things can slip through without him seeing it and representing the company and he had nothing to do with it? Now, let's take another indefatigable person, Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. With all his billions, you know, he runs several special firms that he likes, and then he invests and he does these things, and he has time to go playing cards with Bill Gates at night and have party time there. And now, think about it. I mean, just the numbers in his games are enough to boggle the mind. Now you take the President of the United States. Here he has 50 states that he's concerned about. Here he has 50 governors that he has to know personally. Here he has all of the legislators he has to know, all of the congressmen he has to know. He has to know the people from all the various states and cities who support his party. He has to know all of the things that are going on in the world. He's got to know the world leaders. He's got to be on first-name basis with all the world leaders. He has to know what the world problems are and have a general idea how to solve them. He's got to know his family problems, you know, getting along with his wife, George Bush and his wife, you know. And his wife doesn't make it easy because she's such a dynamic lady. She's out doing her thing, you know. And sometimes it's a little conflict with what daddy's doing, you know. But, hey, one day she'll be president and she'll have her own game. But, I mean, just the few things that I've said about a president is outstanding. It's outrageous that any one mind should have to play in so many fields and do it well. Clinton was a genius at it. And most of our presidents were. That's what made them presidents, and that's what gave them the power. And what was it that all of these great people did, and what was it that all of these great people did not do? These great people took one thought at a time and worked on it. These great people never let themselves be touched by anybody saying anything about them that was true or was not true. And they merely did what they knew they should do in their heart, and they did it without any feeling that somebody's trying to walk on them. Because when you're in a big position, everybody wants to walk on you because they want to get in there. They want to pull you down. They want to pull the pedestal out from underneath you so that you can fall. And now you say, that's a terrible thing to think, but no. You see, if you know that's there, then you're what? Untouched by it. If you don't know it's there, and all of a sudden it's a big surprise, my God, these people don't like me. You know? Why don't people like him? Because he's not good, or because they want to get their party in? Mm-hmm. Or because they want to get their project across? Did you know, I went to see the president and asked him to help our community because we're having such a terrible time and all we're so poor, and he said, sorry, I got other things to think about. The president said that to me, you know. Yeah. You know? The president can't afford to do a goof like that. He has to say to you, hey, you have something really worth looking at. Let me give that to the person in charge of that, and they'll give me a report on it, and then I'll act on it. Thank you, Mr. President. Next. He doesn't give it one single thought until the time comes for him to have the information to base his thought upon. But he doesn't put the person down. He doesn't tell him that your little thing, you're worried about a million-dollar project that's going haywire, and I got a zillion, trillion-dollar projects. Well, what's the matter bothering me with your... The little million-dollar projects make up the zillion dollars that he's dealing with, you know? And he knows that. And you see, big people are able to handle little things exceedingly well. They delegate, give responsibility to other people, and you come back to me and you tell me what it's all about and what your recommendation is, you know. If you think we should give that money to that city or whatever, you know. See? And then you come back, and then I also told him to check on it. So I have two opinions. Yours is from this point of view, and yours is from this point of view. You're the Republican, you're the Democrat. And I've got two points of view. And you both say, go for it. Go for it, you know. If one of you says, don't go for it, well, why, you know? And then we check. But you see, this is genius. Indefatigable people do not fatigue themselves with things that do not concern them. The opinion on your project does not concern me until I have the information. And when I have the information, I make a judgment, and then I'm on to the next one. I don't backthink it, you know. I'm done with it. And this is true for all of us. This is true for all of us. Everyone sitting here at and under this table is indefatigable.
Yes.
Everyone here is absolutely universally intelligent beyond all measure. You know, you're just absolutely wise. Mm-hmm. Because you are indefatigable. Nothing can fatigue you. Nothing can rattle your cage. Nothing can shake your boat. Nothing can touch you. And that's beautiful. Think on these things. Because everyone in the world is indefatigable. And even those people who say they're fatigable are indefatigable, because we're all indefatigable. We cannot be, because the cells of our body are made up of atoms, and those atoms have energy which is beyond any capacity we are currently allowing ourselves to use. Just imagine if we were to use all the energy that our body has in it. Wow! And it's never ending. What would happen? Oh, boggles the mind to think about it. And another day we will. Have a lovely day, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you. Love you.